All right. Welcome back to the Mid-Range Podcast. This is episode 10.
And we made it.
Basketball is back.
We're back.
Are you excited? Are you excited, Nick? I know it's exciting when the basketball season comes back around. You know, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's coming. It's electric for everybody. How are you feeling after night one?
I am excited. College basketball is probably my favorite sport. Anytime it comes back around, it's always fun to have optimism and kind of dive in to see how good these teams are and kind of get your first taste of everything. So, yeah, I thought it was an exciting night one. And had some good games that kind of kicked off the schedule. Obviously, that's kind of a downside of college basketball is the fact that there's not a lot of marquee games right away, but Florida, Arizona delivered and BYU Nova delivered, and some of the Field of 68 showcases, which is a cool event, delivered as well. So yeah, excited for it to be back.
Yeah, 100%. It was definitely a mix. Some, you know, first night of the season is always a lot of low mid-majors versus kind of like bye games, as I said, a lot of lopsided games. But we did, like you said, had a couple good ones. Let's just get right into Arizona-Florida, which was probably the game of the night.
Let's do it.
You were a guy who was very high on Arizona coming into the season. And especially high on Koa Pete, who goes off for 30 points in his freshman debut. I think one of the best true freshman debuts in history. I don't think that's much of an exaggeration when it comes to how well he played last night. Arizona gets a upset win in game one. What do you think, Nick? Are you feeling better than ever about the Arizona Wildcats?
Yeah, you know, I was high on them preseason. Honestly, a really good day for the Big 12. I think a lot of them showed promise. And yeah, Koa Pete's the guy that I picked for freshman of the year. I think it shows that how deep this freshman class is. Like, it seemed like all of them played even above their potential of, and it was a hyped up freshman class as it is. Like, Koa Pete was what, the 8th or to 10th best freshman ranked in this class, yeah. And he dropped 37-5, 3 steals, 1 block. It's interesting the way this Arizona team was formed, because they didn't take a ton of transfers and they went more of the freshman route, which is different. But it was interesting because I heard Tommy Lloyd talking about it after the game, how he liked this freshman class a lot more than some of the transfers he could have had, which is bold nowadays because that's not what a lot of coaches do. But it was proven right with this one. And I think the national media was kind of wrong on Arizona. Obviously, it's night one, and you can't take too much out of night one for any result of any game. But, yeah, Koa Pete, he's a guy who, comparison to Larry Johnson, I think is a great comparison. Grandma Ma back in the day, if you watch his tape and Koa Pete's, it's very similar, where he's a funnily sound guy. And like, not a lot of people talk about Koa Pete's athleticism or his flashiness. Like, he's kind of a Cam Boozer a little bit and fundamental guy. But he had that lob dunk, and he showed that he could be a real difference maker in the top 10 pick coming up in this year's draft. And it's funny, too, because Grandmama Larry Johnson played at UNLV, obviously. And where Koa Pete's debut was in Las Vegas. So a little shades of Grandma Ma there. But yeah, Koa Pete's a dude. And this is the year for NBA teams to tank. Like, we haven't seen this good of a freshman class and a real NBA draft class put together like this in a while, where, like, we'll get into DeBance as well, or even Darren Peterson, and all these guys are stacked. Tonda, yes, I feel like there's, especially in the Big 12, like, Big 12 freshmen are unreal, and Koa Pete's kind of at the top there.
Yeah, he was unreal. He's his physicality had no problem leveling up to the college level, which is probably one of the reasons he was a five-star top 15 guy. But seeing it in action, especially against a top team like Florida, was pretty awesome. I mean, he just was powering through whoever was in front of him time and time again in that game, and he looked as legit as it could get. I don't know, Nick. Do you think this is more of a case of Arizona is really good and they are on the level of a Florida? Or is there a little bit of questions about Florida moving forward after last night's game?
Yeah, I would say this is more for Arizona being better. And maybe not, I don't know. Just they were the better team then, and I think you got to give them credit. But there's definitely some signs of worry about Florida. They, all offseason, the talk has been Condon and Hawk coming back and them being the best front court in the nation. And we saw Koa Pete and the Arizona front court kind of outplay them, which is crazy coming from freshmen. And Montavis Crevis was like barely, like, he was at Arizona last year, but not exactly a superstar. And then you are looking for this Florida backcourt, which got some of the best portal guards in the country in Boogie Flynn and Xavier Lee. Maybe it's a little bigger of a leap to cross. Like, we forget how good the Florida guards are. Like, Walter Clayton and Elijah Martin and Will Richard are all NBA guys. And replacing that is probably harder than what we made it out to be. So, Florida's still going to be really good, and it's one game. But, yeah, you definitely want to see more of the backcourt, and you want to see the front court dominate a little more. Like, Tommy Haug was very good, but you want to see a little more out of Condon and them have the ability to dominate through there. Like, Ruben Chinyelu's back, too. Those three guys have to be the catalyst, because I don't think you're going to get the same production out of the backcourt that you did last year.
Yeah, and if Xavier Lee is coming out there shooting 5 of 17 in his debut for Florida, that's not going to cut it coming down the stretch here. Like, that's not going to be conducive to winning for them. That's not the type of game they can have and win games. And, like, Boogie Flamed, I think a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people online being like, well, Xavier Lee took so many shots, how is Boogie Flan going to get involved? And it's like, well, Boogie Flan didn't get involved. Like, he has to go out there and make his mark when he gets his opportunity. And he goes out there and, you know, goes, what, 3 for 9, 3 for 10, and doesn't really make much of an impact. They both looked a little bit like they weren't ready to handle the speed and the talent of a big-time team like Arizona. And it did look like Arizona was just playing better than them in some ways. But what I will say is Koa Pete, like, as I said right off the top, Koa Pete literally had one of the greatest first games in college basketball history.
History, yeah. And that's fair to say.
And that's fair to say. And it's probably not like Florida has to assume that every game they're going to go against a 30-point, I think it was a 36-5 or whatever, multiple steals type performance for a true freshman guy. Like, it was an exceptional performance, and he's probably better than advertised. Florida's going to have time to pick up the slack, but it definitely was like, I agree with you, where it's like, yeah, Florida lost major talent. And we looked at the front court returning as they're just going to be right back to where they were. They were a top three AP poll coming into the season. They're up there on all the metric rankings. I was kind of leaning towards them being just as good as Purdue or Houston coming right up to this game. And after watching this performance, I definitely feel like I was a little maybe overly estimating Florida, and that maybe last season was more predicated on their elite guard play, which was kind of how we felt last year. We kind of lose sight of that in the offseason at times, but nonetheless, we can move forward from that game. I think the second big-time game yesterday was BYU versus Villanova. BYU wins 71-66. AJ DeBanta has his debut, goes out there, scores 21 points, shooting 9 of 18 from the field, hitting a 3, 2 of 7 from the free throw line, which was a little strange, but a solid debut for DeBanta and a solid debut for BYU, but not necessarily a dominant performance. What did you see with BYU last night, and where are you at with them moving forward?
Yeah, I thought this was a must win for BYU, as much as game ones can be, because they have a tough non-conference, and like if they lost this game, Vegas, to a Villanova team where Kevin Willard's first year, he had a late start putting together that roster, it's just far less talented than what BYU had to put together. It was important they got us, and I actually really liked what they did here. Because DeBanta's 21 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, he did it without looking spectacular, which I think is encouraging. Like, it was kind of an effortless, like, fundamentally sound. He was probably a little bit better on defense than what we thought, too. And he's only going to get better. And the thing that I love about this, too, for a BYU fan perspective, like, Richie Saunders, yeah, he had 15 points, 7 rebounds, but he really wasn't good. And he's only going to be better. And, like, Rob Wright's going to be better, too. So they almost had, like, a subpar performance than what I think they're going to have, and they still were able to get a very nice win on a neutral court going forward. So, yeah, while it didn't wow you, like, winning games when you're not your best is very important, and they were able to do that. Like, Dawson Baker off the bench, it seems like he's been there for forever, dropping in, playing quality minutes as well. These guys are going to be better. I think all of them could be far better than what they played, and winning a game on a C night probably is very encouraging for the BYU Cougars and for the Big 12 as a whole. Big win in night one for the Big 12.
Yeah, top to bottom.
Top to bottom.
I'm gonna be honest. I didn't love what I saw from DeBanta last night. When you say it looked like it was within the flow and easy, I feel the opposite. I felt like every point seemed like he had to go to war for. Like, every time he scored a basket, it seemed like he had to, like, really work for every shot. And there was a part of me that was like, this is the number one guy in the country. We're coming off this Coapete game where everything looked easy. And this is the guy. And now, to be fair to him, it did seem like BYU's entire offense was predicated on running through him. Almost, he seemed like the lead playmaker for a lot of the games, which I thought is a mistake when you have a guy like Rob Wright. That's beside the point. But I thought with DeBanta, it seemed more strenuous for him than I expected. And we didn't talk about this on last week's episode, but when I watched the tape back from Cam Boozer at Tennessee in that exhibition game, it was a little similar to that, where it's like the final numbers look really good and you post them on Twitter and everyone gets excited about them. But there was a part of it when you watch the actual scoring plays where it just – everything looks – difficult and like strenuous, and you just wonder, like, where is AJ DeBanta gonna find easy offense throughout this season? Because it looked like every bucket he made today was either getting to the basket, pump faking 3 times and trying to get a layup off, or trying to shoot a step back mid-range with a guy on him. And he shot 50% yesterday, but is that gonna stay consistent? Is he just that level of player? What do you think about that? Am I off base there?
Yeah, I think we kind of took it about two different ways, where I thought since it wasn't flashy and it was a hard 21 points to get and he still got it and probably was the best player on their team is super encouraging. Because, like I said, Rob Ryan and Richie Saunders are going to be on. They're not going to be playing like they were yesterday. And so you're going to allow DeBanza to play free. Like, there's a very valid argument that DeBanza is not even the best player on this team. He probably is. He is for me, but you can make the argument otherwise. And this is game one. He's 18 years old. He's reclassified. Yeah. Like, he's only going to get far better, and the ability for him to score in different ways is encouraging, where once he gets to the flow of this offense down the stretch of the season, it's going to be so dangerous because he's going to have the highlight level plays, and he's going to be able to have an ugly 21 points. Like, whenever you have a game where it feels like, you know, you're not making the flashy plays or you're not playing well, and you still look up at the score and you're dropping 21 points, leading your team in a win on a neutral side against Villanova, it's fine by me.
Yeah, that's fair. If we're moving down the list with BYU, we touched on Rob Wright a little bit. I thought he, in a performance where he shot 5 of 16, maybe not the most efficient day, maybe not the best playmaking day with only one assist, I did think he looked sharp in a way that, like, when he got the ball, it just felt like he was doing his best to make the right thing happen. And his athleticism, dude, it pops. Like, he gets the ball in his hands and he's at the basket in half a second, and he's lifting up and trying to go down and score with the big guys inside. I thought Rob Wright, who was obviously a major transfer this summer coming over from Baylor, we've talked about this in the past, but kind of an indictment on this modern NIL situation where he got that last second offer from BYU and ends up going over there. But I thought he looked sharp even in not his best performance. But the guy I really want to highlight and showcase was Kaba Keita, who transferred from Utah before last season. This is his second year at BYU. I thought he looked awesome. If you're just looking at the box score, you see his stats, and it's a pretty underwhelming, maybe 8 points, 7 rebounds, 3 block type game. He did that in 24 points, and you felt those 8 points. You felt those 3 blocks. I mean, he is an athletic freak who is a legit interior defender. And I know when we talked about BYU in our Big 12 episode, I had a lot of questions when it came to the Cougars' defense and if AJ DeBanza would be able to lock in and be a major part of that. If Keita is going to be that capable guarding the inside, that's a massive advantage for them going down the stretch. And I do think he could be a serious X factor for them. In this starting lineup, man, DeBanza, Keita, Sanders, and Wright as the...
Kennard Davis forward. Is good, too.
Yeah, I mean, they are... they're as talented as anyone in the country. And yet, they only beat Villanova, who neither of us picked to go to the tournament this year, by 5 points. So I don't know. What do you think about Villanova here? Are you higher on Villanova than you were before this game? Is it kind of a wash for you? What do you think?
It's about the same. I think it's going to be a lot of growing pains in year one. I just think the talent's not extremely there. As we talked about, the whole Willard thing last year was weird and how he got there, and it seems like he didn't really get the full grasp of talent that you'd expect that from a Villanova team. So yeah, I'm not extremely bullish on them. I think honestly the ability to keep it close within 5 against a BYU team is something you can take away. I don't know, that they're probably going to be bubble-ish, probably not make the tournament this year, from my guess. In a weak Big East, they don't seem like they're, like, I would put Creighton above them, I would put Marquette above them, like, when you look at teams above them, like, they're probably better than Providence, but Providence could be good. There's a lot of those, they're in that mid-mix to where they could make it. I think it's just wait-and-see type of thing.
Yeah, that's fair. So, I think we can both agree that Arizona and BYU had the two biggest wins of the night, these primetime Power 5 type performances. But at a certain point, Nick, we got to go down the list and we got to look at some of these Power 4 type programs that really struggled in these bye games. Now, I think
and
we go straight down to Alabama. We go straight down to Alabama. We talk about Auburn.
All right.
Obviously, Bruce Pearl retires in the summer, has his son, Stephen Pearl, to be the new head coach. And they come to the season ranked top 20. I think a lot of people had some questions about them. I don't think anyone expected them to go to overtime with Bethune in their first game of the season. What do you think, Nick? Is this just kind of reaffirming your priors with Auburn, or what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, they lost a lot last season, and I see what you're doing, slowly ripping off this Band-Aid of the elephant in the room, which is a strategy. But yeah, I mean, they obviously lost a ton, like Chad Baker Mazzara, Janai Broom. The only guy really coming back is Todd Pettiford. He even lost like Denver Jones and all these guys from last season. So it's a completely new team, and Stephen Pearl is, as you were big on, I don't think we both were kind of low on Auburn from what I remember. Yeah, obviously you don't want to go to overtime with Bethune. It's a scary situation. There's going to be some growing pains with a new head coach and a completely new roster. Keyshawn Hall looked good. Shout out from UCF and Kevin Overton also from the Big 12. So, obviously they escaped with it, which not every team did. But Merrimack at home next game. Merrimack played a close game with South Dakota State on the field of 68 showcase. Watch out for that one.
That would be pretty brutal to go to start off your season with that one, but I love it, Nick. We'll stay around the horn here. Let's head over to what didn't end up being necessarily the devastating result that some teams had, but Michigan State.
We're still doing it. All right.
Let's
talk Michigan State.
You see Colin Carr with 12 points. He looked okay. Michigan State overall looked
okay.
The lob
was cool.
What do you think about that game, and where do you lie with Michigan State and Tom Izzo after maybe
I didn't watch a second of Colgate Michigan State. I saw the lob from Cohen Carr that off the glass.
That was pretty cool.
That was sick. And then the environment was cool for game one against Colgate. I don't know why we're talking about an 11-point win of Michigan over Colgate or Michigan State over Colgate, but yeah, if shout out the Big Ten.
All right, Nick. If you want to get into the nitty gritty here,
Talk about it. I want to rip the Band-Aid off. Let's talk about it.
I read
Boise State. Boise State. You lose to a D2 Hawaii Pacific. I mean, worst loss of the day. All right. Let's talk about it. TCU, New Orleans. You read the article?
I read the article a little bit.
Shout out the article, though. It's doing well.
Shout out the article. It was optimistic, to say the least, but I know you're an optimistic guy. Nick, where are we? TCU.
I thought it was fair. I thought it was fair.
TCU loses in a bye game against University of New Orleans, who hasn't beaten a Power 4 team in 8 years. It was tough result for TCU in game one. Tough result for Jamie Dixon in game one. And to add insult to injury, Malik Diallo out for the season with a torn ACL, a close personal friend of yours. Where do you sit on the TCU Horned Frogs right now, having taken that loss in game one?
Yeah, it's I want to do a joke. I want to do a spin zone. But just getting the news about Malik Diallo's ACL really puts a downer on this whole thing. It was more frustrating because I didn't even get to watch it live. I was working and watched it this morning and really got the full glimpse of it all. I will be in the
Good
show Thursday. But, yeah, no, it was fun.
I can't believe you went back and watched that, honestly.
I can't not watch it all. You got to know how it unfolded. But, yeah, okay, let's get to it. It is an inexcusable loss on all fronts. You can make all the excuses you want. One could say that, again, you lost Malik Diallo. He only played 7 minutes. And Vianney Salatium, your other center, was out with an illness. And another one of your best rebounders, Jace Pogue, was out.
If you were going to make excuses, which
I'm not. I'm telling it how it is. No, legitimately, this is an inexcusable loss. You cannot have this loss. Your standard is to never lose a bye game. Take care of business at home. Those were not met. You could have half your roster, and you should still be able to beat New Orleans, even though this is a much improved New Orleans team. It's heartbreaking because you saw what happened in the Texas scrimmage. I think a lot of people are questioning if that result was real or not. And the Tarleton exhibition, where they were extremely successful. They were rebounding well. They were shooting the ball well. Everything seemed to be falling into place. And this game, none of it happened. Like, in my article I wrote about the thoughts, like, they made it such an emphasis bringing in shooting with both the freshman, the junior college center, and then transfers. And those transfers, when I combine one of – or those newcomers, when I combine one of 20 from three, that's – inexcusable. Again, that's not going to happen ever again, and you're missing shots. But it seemed like first game, anxiousness, like there was some bad shot selection. Defensively, they were off the rotations. Like they were getting beat inside. They were allowing shooters. Like credit to New Orleans. They played very well, and they were hitting tough shots to be able to pull it off. But it sucks. There's no way around it. And I talked about it in the article, the only way to get around it is winning, and the best thing about having a tough non-conference schedule is it gives you the opportunity. Now you can say that it's like it doesn't even matter at this point because this team is poor. I choose to think that you're never as bad as you think you are after one of these games, and not to overreact there. Like it is one game. And you still have the rest of your season left. And while it sucks because it's, again, an inexcusable loss and at the start of the season and really puts it dimmer on kind of the rest of the way, you do have opportunities to be able to turn it around. Like I said in my article, the 2023 team lost to Northwestern State at home and only needed a Mike Miles game winner to beat Arkansas Pine Bluff at home in game one. I don't want to compare too much for either one of those teams because 2023 team was probably more talented, but they ended up getting a 6 seed in the tournament, and it really didn't matter because the committee does value games closer to the end of the year rather than game one. So I think it's important, to not let this derail your season. Like, just get better against Lamar, win next week, or get better against St. Francis and Lamar, and then on Friday, like, you do have Michigan coming in, and they're going to be thinking you're a bad team now. And if you can pull off the upset against Michigan, then this becomes irrelevant, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, it's an afterthought.
It honestly is. Like, genuinely. Like, they have all the opportunity to make it an afterthought, and it sucks because Malik Diallo is going to be such a big part of this team and the starting center and made such strides from freshman to sophomore year, which genuinely – like, it is heartbreaking because he had a torn ACL from his senior – had to miss his whole senior year of high school and played far better than what anybody expected with no offseason program last year. And was a lot of teams wanted him in the portal. It just stayed at TCU. So that sucks. But next man up, Xavier Edmonds, top JUCO recruit. And then Vianney Salachuma is unfortunately out from FIU. Next man up. Hopefully they don't have to play David Bunch of the Five a lot, but I mean, they have the talent. Like, I think the optimism was warranted. Whenever you have such a dominant scrimmage, there's still signs that this team could be good. Just don't read into the tea leaves of all this stuff and just kind of focus on yourself, because like, Brock Harding's probably not going to shoot that poorly all season, and Jaden Pierre is going to have much more success. I like what David Punch showed and Micah Robinson as silver linings, but overall, like, it's just, I don't think overdo any big changes, because the 3-point shooting and the rebounding are kind of hopefully going to be outliers with stats in this thing. But yeah, there's as much as it is tough to say right now because it's such a bad situation and a bad loss, like, there really is so much of the story of the season left to be unwritten. So well, yeah, while I would love to do a bit or play into it, which will probably turn into one as we go further in the year with this podcast. Right now I'm going to be serious and just kind of say, yeah, just cancel out the noise. They're going to try to hate on the Frogs. They're going to try to write them off. Nobody's going to pay attention to them. You just keep winning and winning. And then eventually, as you said,
that's where Jamie Dixon does his best work, when everyone counted him out.
I mean, if you look at the 2023 team, you lose to Northwestern State, and what do they do after that loss against Northwestern State? They run the table in the non-conference, become a 6 seed in the NCAA tournament, win game one against Arizona State, and if their starting big man Eddie Lampkin was on the team at that point in the Gonzaga game, then I would argue that they'd win that. There's personal reasons of falling out. I don't know. He hit the transfer portal. But the point is being, like, there's so much left to write in the season, and I don't want to be the one to overreact and just completely not pay attention to this team at this point because I love college basketball too much and am hoping for the best. Next man up.
Yeah, Nick. I mean, that sucks. I don't know. Like, it's tough because it's like I don't want to be the Grim Reaper here, but it's not great. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, no.
It's an inexcusable loss. You're never as bad as your worst loss, right? Like, you're never as good as your best win. You're never as bad as your worst loss. Like, we know that's how college sports works. There are crazy wins like this. New Orleans is not better than TCU. Like, we can say that. I will say that. You don't have
to. I can't say that. I cannot say that.
Yeah, you shouldn't say that, but I'll say it. Because I honestly believe it. If you played the game 100 times, I'm sure TCU would win 90. But they didn't win last night.
Yeah.
And that's a major issue. And I do think it's tough when you had excitement and you were amped up and, like, all the shooting is really the most concerning thing for TCU, right? Like, it's you can't shoot 3 of 27 from three against New Orleans, because it's like, stop shooting threes. Like, go inside and score in the paint against New Orleans. It's not, you're not playing Texas Tech or Houston here, right? Like, it's like, I think there is, like, gonna have to be a come to Jesus moment for a lot of these guys, other than punch, to, like, get a little more physical, push it inside, get down and play a little better defensively too. And, like, yeah, Malik Diallo went out and that sucks. And you lose your starting center and that sucks. And he's out for the year, which, like you said, thoughts and prayers to him. That's terrible. But all you can do is adjust to what's in front of you. And, like, I do feel for you. Cause, like, I don't know. TCU is in a tough spot. Like, it's tough when everybody on college basketball Twitter is talking about TCU. Like, that's a tough spot for TCU, 100%. And, I don't know. I hope it works out. You know, I have nothing but love for the Horned Frogs. I feel like I'm a friend of the program, of course. But, yeah, it's a bummer, man. What's next for TCU here? Like, What's the silver lining here? David Punch had a big game. He's kind of this breakout star. How worried are you about Harding? What's next for TCU? You said they play. Who do they play next?
We got St. Francis Thursday, and then Lamar on Monday, and then Michigan. So here's my silver lining. And you know me, like, if there's if there's one person that's going to give a spin on to be optimistic about TCU sports in general, it's I'm on it.
You're that guy. Yeah.
But yeah, and again, I'm not going to. I probably am way too optimistic, and I probably talk myself into optimism far too much. But that's just kind of the route I choose to go with. It sucks. There's a lot that needs to be fixed. Here's what I will say. The moment of it being game one, I think the anxiety of being down to New Orleans and the fear of losing that game kicked in, where, like you said, the shot selection was poor. I think that's just a product of, damn, we're losing to New Orleans. We got to shoot some threes to get back in this game. And it was just, like you said, poor shot selection. Like, they had the ball down two and decided to shoot two contested threes with guys who finished a combined 0 of 11 from three that game. Probably bad decision. It's that. And hopefully when you get to play with yourselves more, you understand you understand the offense and get more comfortable playing with each other. they were 3 of 27 from three. I'd be willing to bet they don't go 3 of 27 from three again this season. From percentage wise, no better than I don't worry about Brock, and I don't worry about Pierre because of all the noise in the offseason. I'm just going to write that off from one bad performance. They're going to be the catalyst of this team. I would like to see. I know Dixon talked about post-game how he considers Michael Robinson a starter and Xavier Edmonds as starters. Like when you have like the coach speak where you have seven starters or whatever. I would like to see a bigger step where LT Lataris Levicius was a bit underwhelming for his debut, where he went 0-7 from three. Like, I would like to see a little more minutes to the guys that you already know can play well for you, like Punch and Micah, who were the best players in this game for the Frogs. Just kind of roll with those guys that you trust already, instead of kind of handing these positions to transfer wings that obviously did not play as well as you liked. And talking about Tanner Toulson and Lataris Lilavicius. And they didn't play Bug Edwards. Caden Edwards, their top freshman, a lot, who's kind of a scoring, you know, a scoring weapon. And RJ Jones is one of their top shooters as well. People are probably getting tired of me talking too deep in the details of TCU, but just know it's going to be better. Like, this is not going to be the case. And the urgency is up now. Like, you have no room. Like, you're going to have to. Here's my thing. Coming into this big non-conference, you had big dogs, Michigan, Florida. You're probably going to play Wisconsin or Providence, who's big, Notre Dame. Like, you're going to have to pick off a Michigan or a Florida to really make this fine. Because I thought if you ran the table with all the bye games, you know, you beat Notre Dame, you beat North Texas, and you just take losses to, like, Michigan, Providence, or Wisconsin, or Florida, then you'd be fine. Now the room for having a successful non-conference has just changed dramatically, where you're going to have to, like, pick off that Michigan game at home, like, play up to that, really take that as, like, win-or-go-home mentality, because you put yourself in a super tough spot losing this game. And while, yes, the season is still much ahead of you, and don't overreact to that result, but play like every game matters and be up for every game, because it does now, because you can't afford to drop a stupid game like sweep North Texas and Notre Dame and that Wisconsin Providence and pick off a Florida or a Michigan, like try to split that, because you're going to need everything you want now, or everything you got now. And yeah, it sucks, but there's, again, I'm not going to overreact to one game.
Yeah, you're a better man than me. I would be overreacting for sure. So I respect your level-headedness, and I do think you have a point here where it's like, get the guys in who showed that they would do anything to win last night, and, you know, let those guys play 35 to 40 minutes in these games, because like you said, the only way to get back in a competitive standpoint, like, the only way that you can reassure that your standard resets is if you go beat one of these teams, right? So
exactly,
like,
yeah.
It's not like you go beat, even if you beat Michigan, it's not like you're guaranteed to be in the tournament, guaranteed, whatever, but it resets the clock. Because it's
it
like,
takes a test. Right, the taste out of your mouth, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, go win one of these games, and I hope that does happen for the sake of TCU. And the thing is, like you said, probably getting too into the nitty gritty, and maybe that's true, but if TCU goes and loses one of these next couple games, then we're going to have a great clip to post on the timeline. So it's pretty much a win-win either way for the mid-range. Brutal loss for TCU. Brutal loss.
Yeah, like, you do have less room to play with your rotations now. I think that's a good point from you.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because when you play these bye games, you're playing a lot more guys and you're seeing what you got. Like, you have to, there's no room for that anymore. Everything's sped up in terms of timeline wise for playing good ball because of this result. So yeah, it sucks. It sucks a ton, but it is what it is and you got to play through it.
Yeah, that's fair. Nick, let's get to Ohio State here in a second. Before we do, were there any other general college basketball thoughts you wanted to talk about here on the pod today? Anything on your mind from the first night of games?
Yeah, I thought the Field of 68 event was cool. The fact that it was all day, I think next year they're going to get 24 hours. And I know that the stream came in and out, but it's cool to have that kind of, even though it wasn't amazing teams, that moment for college basketball where it's I don't know, it's kind of special where you have the full day and the kickoff to the season. I thought that was cool. And High Point with a massive win over Furman. Don't look now. High Point could be undefeated at the end of the season.
Wow, Nick.
Clean. That's my bold prediction from day one. High Point will be undefeated. Clean.
Will be
undefeated at the end of the season.
I love it, Nick.
The Big South is bad. They're by far the best team. You look at their schedule. Like, Furman was arguably the toughest game they played. Or UAB. They have UAB on the 14th.
Yeah.
They have look at their schedule.
State, yeah,
take a peek at High Point schedule. All I'm gonna say, High Point could be undefeated at the end of the year.
Yeah, Winthrop, second to last game of the season going into that, was it the Big South tournament? Another team that was involved in the Field of 68 matchups.
Yeah, the kickoff game.
I love the High Point take. I don't know anything about them, so it's respect. I believe you.
Neither do I, but
I
looked at their schedule because I was impressed by High Point, and they were an NCAA tournament team last year and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, oh, let's see what they got. You look at their schedule. Watch out. And hopefully there's a clip there too. My TCU stuff wasn't very clippable, so hopefully that gives you a clip.
we'll find one. Don't you worry, we'll find one. We'll find one of you being very positive. That'll be great for your socials.
that was my honest take though. My takeaway a year or a day after. Read my article too.
Like,
less blabbering.
Nikki, I've known you for a very long time. It's like your presence on social media, pure optimism about TCU, is no different than the way you've ever treated any of your sports teams your entire life. So it's not a fake. Like, it's not fake at all. Like, it's exactly
it's
how
more
exactly
fun that way. It's more fun to be like, you know what?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. I know.
You know what?
I don't think
this
it's
is a wake up
all.
Call.
That's, yeah, exactly. Wake up call. We're beating top 10 Michigan next Friday.
Yeah, book it. Here's the clip. TCU losing to New Orleans was the wake up call they needed. to where I think they would have lost that game to Michigan if they would have beat New Orleans. Now, watch out for a sleepy Shulman Arena now that nobody's invested anymore. From top 10 Michigan to waltz in off a hangover over Wake Forest, I believe. TCU will beat Michigan next Friday, November 14th. And the season will be flipped around.
I love it. There we go. Cliff activated. I love it.
There's a part of me that believes it, too.
I know there is.
There's a part of me.
Yeah, I mean, there's a part of you that believes Jimmy Garoppolo is a top five quarterback for about 4 years. So I totally believe your excitement.
He was a winner.
Exactly. And so is Jamie Dixon. And,
Jamie Dixon is the winner. 504 career wins. 21st of among all active coaches.
I think he's quietly 21st. Quietly 21st in the country, if you ask me. Yeah, to get back to the Field of 68 opening day. It was a lot of fun. The stream was a problem, but it was a lot of fun to just like... And it was particularly charming. Like you said, like it was not necessarily, you know, it wasn't Duke, Carolina or whatever. It was fun that you get to see those teams that, you know, pop up on your TV every now and then when you're flipping channels and you're like, oh yeah, like Winthrop and oh yeah, you know, St. Bonnie's, and like you got like fake stories about Woj getting kicked out of the arena. And it was very like,
shout out that guy.
It was very, yeah, that was good for him. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
He got his little moment.
Yeah, I thought it was fun, like, laying in bed in the morning watching Queens and being like, what is this? And then they have, like, this kid that was, like, you know, they had the South Carolina Mr. Basketball is on Queens? Like, this is the number one guy in South Carolina. And, like, I will say, watching these smaller mid-major teams – across the country, do well. Like, well, let's talk about. We'll use the opportunity to talk about OSU, IUPUI, because that was a fun game. So, like, watching IU Indy score 100, watching Winthrop Queens, like watching St. Bonnie's versus Bradley. Like, the NIL era is hurting mid majors in a lot of ways, but it's also opening up a route for, like, there's so much talent on these top teams. Because of, like, the introduction of, like, European players coming over, professional players coming over, that it's actually opening up a lot of talent pool for these smaller programs to, like, go grab a four-star local guy because he's, like, he's not even getting recruited by South Carolina, like, University of South Carolina. So he's like, yeah, I'll just go over to... You know, I'll go over to Queens and I'll play a year and I'm going to average 20 a game and then I'm going to get a transfer to Duke or Carolina or wherever. And, like, it was no better example of this than watching Ohio State yesterday. And I was at the game. It was a little bit of a disappointing atmosphere, but, I mean, what do you expect for the first game against IUPUI? The arena's way too big. Ohio State wins 118-102. It was the highest scoring game, highest scoring first game in Ohio State's history. It was triple digits at halftime. It was like 66-50. It was an absurdly high scoring game. One of the craziest stats of the whole thing, which I don't think can go underrated. IUPUI in yesterday's game shot 76 shots. The way that they play, what's the coach's name, Nick? Do you know it off the top of your head? I want to give him his
first. IUPUI's coach? I do not.
Yeah. I only ask because it's like a thing. Ah, shit. It's all right. I don't want to get too into it. I'll find it.
Ben Howlett
comes over from D2, I think it was like Robert.
Yeah, he's never coached. Yeah.
Yeah. Never coached in D1. IUPUI, now IU Indy, is the worst D1 college basketball program. Like, has been forever. Yes. Like, no exaggeration. Yeah.
Shout out to Mantis.
Yeah.
IUPUI, yeah.
I think he was in the well, talk about that later. But yeah, IUPUI has been a joke for laughingstock forever. They've never had even something to get excited about. They looked awesome. And, like, you can watch that game and be like, Ohio State's defense is not very good, which they're not. And you could be like, yeah, it's a bad look for Ohio State letting IUPUI score 100 points, which it is. However, watching it live, they pressed IUPUI, or IU Indy rather, pressed the entire game. Ben Howlett, who comes up from D2, he has this mentality of just constant pressing, constant fast break. They are going to score triple digits a lot this year. Do not be surprised to see them scoring 100 over and over and over, because they play so fast. And it was so much fun to watch. It was like, maybe Ohio State's defense is terrible, but man, this game sure is exciting. I want to give a special shout out to their sophomore transfer who came with Howlett from the D2 level. Cameron Tinsley came off the bench for them. He dropped 22 in 23 minutes and was a legit like sniper when he played. But the biggest bright spot in the game, the most exciting aspect of the game for Ohio State, was how good Christoph Tilley looked. He was a guy who you highlighted when we talked about Ohio State in our Big Ten episode in the preseason. Comes from the WCC. He was awesome, man. Like, he can put the ball on the floor at his size, and he's got good touch around the rim. He can pass it. He can shoot a little bit. He really was, like, you know, like, when you play a team like IU Indy, you just want to see guys dominate, and Tilley dominated. Like, he looked like he was a level above the rest of his competition. It was actually, you know, it was the highest scoring game for Ohio State in, like, some absurd, like 8 years or something. 28 points.
118 is a ton. Yeah. 118 is a ton.
Oh, it was crazy. It was crazy. It was hard to even, like, realize how crazy it was in the moment. And then you, like, you go on Twitter on your way home, and you're like, holy shit, that was 118 points? Yeah. Like, it was awesome. The court is awesome. Nick, do you have any thoughts or feelings about OSU, IU Indy at all?
Yeah, I did not watch this game. Let me think. We're both Warriors fans. What do you think of the Christoph Tilley Quentin Post comp? That's what I had thought a lot last year watching him. A little bit bad on defense, but can stretch the floor and be very effective offensively. Yeah. And, like, probably more of Quentin Post in college, obviously, being more of a factor. But I don't know. That's just kind of what I always thought, so I figured I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. Probably Post with a little more – probably a better shooter, but maybe not the same. Maybe I do think Tilley is a better handle, but that's a good comparison. Yeah. And Tilley, like, I think he's going to be one of my favorite players all year, because I love offense. Like, this Ohio State team is going to, and there's something about that front court with Ohio State. And then you bring Cupsit off the bench, and you're like, this is a guy that you can absolutely trust, first guy in, last guy out type of guy, and that's the most important thing. But Tilley, I know I'm going to love Tilley all year. He is bad on defense. Like, he is so bad on defense. Like, he can't, like, his lateral movement is non-existent. And then you have, like, a 6'3 guy come to the paint with him and just finish right over him. It's like, dude, you got to show something. I was really excited about the Brandon Knoll, Christoph Tilley front court after that exhibition against Ohio, where they looked really good. I don't know if that defense is going to be there with the two of them starting together long term. It might have to go back to they had at the end of the game, they went Mobley, Thornton, Cups, Royal, Tilley. So Royal slides to the four. They go three guards. So they had three ball handlers out there. Gabe Cups works his ass off on defense, and I'll give him credit for that 100%. Definitely. I'm looking forward to seeing more from him as the season goes on. Noel, I hope Noel looks better. He was a little disappointing, but aside from him, Mobley, same thing. Mobley, I might be falling out of love a little bit with Mobley. There's a couple times where, you know, you take a three, you take a 30-foot three, right? And then it bricks wide left, and you're just, and Ohio State's fighting for a rebound, and you're just like standing there moping because you missed the three. It's just driving me crazy. So I'm going to need him to like step up a little bit as the season goes on. But Ohio State escapes with a win in an electric game that I think, funny enough, Ohio State TCU probably had the two most interesting final scores of the night for these like mid-major, low mid-major bye games, right?
Well, I mean, probably Auburn.
Yeah, but who would have thought Auburn. That we'd be like they, the nation, the Twitter would be talking about TCU and Ohio State, like just completely random, given the performances. But
yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. Are you going to the game? You're going to the next TCU game?
Yeah, I'll be there. St. Francis Thursday. I'm doing the doubleheader with the women's, too. Women's debut, okay. Number 17 in the nation. I got my Big 12 tournament champion shirt on, women's basketball. So I'm excited to see what MC has with his new squad. And then hopefully get a little bounce-back game for the men's. I'm scared of what the attendance will be like. Lady, you could probably hear a pin drop in there if we're being honest, but no, I am looking forward to it. I haven't been back in the Shoal since a long time. It's been too long, so I'm looking forward to it. And then I believe I'm going to the Michigan game as well, confirmed. Nice. So that's next Friday, so I'm excited for that.
Are you covering it, or are you just going as a fan?
I'm going to cover it. I'm going to cover both of them, so yeah, hopefully get some clips, see the guys, hopefully meet some of the new players, and yeah, should be fun.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Women's preview is in the works, so that'll be coming out in the next coming weeks.
30-second women's preview? Yeah,
30-second women's preview. Bunch of teams, bunch of ladies going to play real hard.
Did you watch Baylor-Duke by any chance in Paris?
Oh yeah.
Big win for the Big 12. Genuinely aside, TCU honestly screwed it up. Undefeated day for the Big 12 men's.
Yeah.
Besides the TCU loss. So, like, shout out the conference. It really goes to show the SEC, like, the Arizona win head-to-head over Florida, and then TCU head-to-head win over Texas. So, yeah,
think
it just
Big
shows
who. Undefeated as well, but maybe not. Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, shout out
awesome
the women's team.
For the 12. Big good time shout out to the 12. Big time shout out to the 10 as well. Nick, you know what? I appreciate the hell out of you for being willing to come on and do a pod after what was a tough day for you yesterday. You know, let's live, let's grow from this moment. Let's have a great year.
Put yesterday behind. All right.
Put yesterday behind.
Way too early predictions. Friday, November 14th. Come on. TCU, Michigan, who you got? Way too early. We'll do a preview next week as well. Don't you worry. I know everybody's waiting for it.
Way too early prediction. You got to take... You gotta think TCU coming off a tough loss to New Orleans, to a scrappy New Orleans team.
They're good. They're much better than last year.
Yeah, they're great. They're elite. An elite New Orleans team.
They were gonna be looking back at the end of the season and be like, yeah, like New Orleans is a Final Four team.
Yeah, 31-1 New Orleans beat TCU. Yeah, no big deal. This is not that surprising. The top four seed. Yeah, I'll take the Frogs against Michigan on next Friday. I can't wait for it. David Punch is going to be... I see. Here's my predictions. Brock Harding, 20-10, 5 threes. David Punch, 27, 10 rebounds, multiple blocks. Malik Diallo recovers and plays 20 minutes. It's the TCU Horned Frogs. They're going to kill Michigan and those goddamn Wolverines, and I can't wait for it. Nick, thank you for recording with me today. Anything you want to put? Oh, before we get off, I have created a Substack.
And I have yes.
My first blog.
I thought it was amazing.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. It actually is exciting.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's just going to be – right now I'm just thinking Ohio State basketball blogs. Probably just one before every game is what I'm thinking. If I feel crazy, I'll write more. I'm just going to use it as like a journal pretty much. So I'm looking forward to it.
Let's
I'll
go.
I'll plug that. It's linked on all my socials, and I think it's just Jacob Weiss 04 on Substack. So please go give it a look. Nick, you want to plug your stuff and get the hell out of here?
Yeah, everything's at my ex at Jeremontinicky, GIRIMONTENICKY. Good win for St. Mary's as well. Mikey Lewis is an NBA player. Write that down. And yeah, go Frogs. Always.
All right. Thank Prayers you so much for listening, Diallo. Everybody. Prayers out to Malik Diallo, and thank you for listening to the Mid-Range Podcast. This is Jacob Weiss and Nick Jeremonti signing off. Bye.